What up, what up? It's your player partner checking in. 2 Chainz, and right now you're locked in to Jalen and Jacoby. Yeah.
He is Jalen Anthony Rose.
What up, doll?
I'm David Jacoby.
And on the cool check-in.
Together with Jalen Jacoby, what is it that we do?
We give the people what they want.
ESPN and Disney and Jason Hare and Michael Jordan and so many gave the people what they wanted last night with episode 1 and episode 2 of The Last Dance. Make sure you listen to the official after show of The Last Dance, Jalen Jacoby after show, The Last Dance, where anywhere you listen to podcasts. But just because they aired episode 1 and 2 does not mean we have stopped Jalen and Jacoby's The Last Dance countdown. Now, there's a lot to look forward to in episode 3 and episode 4 this weekend. We hear it'll focus on Rodman, it'll focus on the Bad Boy Pistons, but we just watched 1 and 2, so let's relive a little bit of the moments from that. And the main theme of episode 1 and 2, sort of the villain, was established in the general manager, Jerry Krause. Now, Jalen, we've discussed the relationship between Krause and these Bulls and the fact that he said Phil Jackson could go 82-0 and he would still no longer be the head coach in the following season. So my question for you, as someone who's in the league for as long as you were, what is that relationship like between the front office and players, and how tense does it get?
So it's a classic example, and we all want to be successful. We all want to be famous. We all want to be rich. It becomes a drug. And then all of a sudden, you've seen people who've accomplished so very much seem to be some of the most unhappy people of all time. And in sports, just think about this for a second. Jerry Krause should be taking victory laps, rest in peace, as an executive, and should have gotten in the Hall of Fame while he was alive, Jacoby, for discovering Phil Jackson, bringing on Tex Winter, getting Scottie Pippen as a top 5 pick, a guy that was not even on his squad in college, an NAIA school, drafted Horace Grant, traded Charles Oakley for Bill Cartwright. He should be celebrated for these moves. Added Dennis Rodman after the San Antonio Spurs years. Except he couldn't get out of his own way. And that was ego. He and Jerry Reinsdorf felt that they needed to make sure that they controlled the power dynamic. Yes, Phil, you can win all of these championships, but this is our team. Yes, MJ, you could be the best player in the world, but this is our team. There's a certain ceiling that we're going to have for you. So going 82-0 ain't even enough. Do you think that he could go into the office and say that to a 5-time champion without the owner having his back? He did. And Krause became the villain while not actually being the final decision maker. And for him to not allow this team to ride off into the sunset is going to haunt his legacy forever.
It certainly will. I'm glad you brought up Reisendorf, because not just in this film, but sort of in the annals of basketball history, a lot of this gets put on the shoulders of Krause. But as you mentioned, Krause was empowered by ownership, and I feel like ownership used him a little bit of a lightning rod of criticism, and he was actually kind of doing Reisendorf's bidding all throughout, which is something that's important to be recognized, especially as you watch the rest of this documentary unfold. Now, Jalen, there's obviously so much of this is centered on Michael Jordan, but it also is centered on an era, not just the music, not just the fashion, but some of the other teams and players in the league. And one of those teams and players was someone who's very special to both of us, Larry Joe Bird. And Larry Joe Bird spoke about the Game 2 performance in Boston when Michael Jordan scored 63 points, still the highest ever in a playoff game by an individual. And he said that Michael Jordan was, quote, God in gym shoes. Do you think that moment, those two games in Boston, was the time when he sent a message to the league saying, I am the alpha dog now. I'm going to be here forever. You all are going to now have to deal with me, Michael Jeffrey Jordan?
I realized something, Jacoby, and please correct me if I'm wrong. In music,
you probably are.
In movies, with technology, in sports, a lot of times when you start debating who's the greatest of all time, you start to get people in the conversation that have only seen one era. So it kind of convolutes the discussion to where I've decided, if you're not at least 40 years old, I'm not debating you who the greatest NBA player of all time. Because you also probably think Drake is the greatest rapper or Lil Wayne of all time. But that's your era. And I say that about LeBron James. And so Michael Jordan, Jacoby, came back from an injury, was working out at Carolina, playing 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5, without the team even knowing. They were trying to tank. They were trying to tank. He was like, no, I'm healthy. I want to play. They were forced to play him, and it was only 14 minutes, a little over a quarter. Told the head coach, if you play him more than that, we're going to fire you. He went off in those 14 minutes so much that they made the playoffs as a 30-win team. So he salvaged something. That's greatness. And then you get a chance to play against one of arguably the greatest basketball teams of all time. You from Massachusetts. Tell the world what you were doing to a Larry Bird poster. Tell the world, please.
Well, I prayed to a Larry Bird poster every single night. And again, I'm glad that you brought up the different eras because you know I don't do cross-era comparisons. Wilt was the greatest of his time. Kareem was the greatest of his time. Bill Russell was the greatest of his time. Jordan was clearly the greatest of this time. But greatest of all time is so difficult to determine because we don't have time machines where these players can play in different eras. However, Kevin Durant, he went down that hypothetical highway in terms of what it would be like if Michael Jordan played in today's NBA. And here's what KD had to say about MJ.
I mean, he can adapt his game to anything. He would fit in as the best player in the league. Like, that's what he would be. And, you know, I feel like he'll have more possessions to do more things, but there's also more athleticism in his game, and there's more length in his game, but, you know, it's also more space for MJ to go to work. So, I mean, we'll never know, but for sure, I mean, he's a master, you know, masterful basketball player, like we've been saying, his skill level is unmatched. So, of course, he'll do numbers in this league today.
I mean, Jalen, I don't want to go down the who's the greatest of all time. We just discussed why it's an impossible argument to answer. But just give me a very brief idea of what it would be. Jalen, you just said everyone says it from their own era. Michael Jordan happens to be of your era. Well,
it ain't no question who the greatest basketball player of all time is.
Trap. You're falling into the same trap that you just said that you set for yourself, Jalen. Honestly, you did. You really just did.
There's no argument for who the greatest basketball player of all time. Let me just acknowledge that. KD is right. Jordan would fit back in today's game and be the best player. But KD said a couple of things that I want to get technical about as a former player. It was that players are more athletic and longer. You know what else, KD, players are? Not as physical. You know what else?
Mm-hmm.
Not as large. And there are more possessions, as he alluded to. So therefore, MJ would have evolved his game and got to the line more when those years that he was averaging 33, 34, Jacoby, you and I both know he would have had multiple years where he averaged 40 easily.
Well, obviously, Michael Jordan would dominate today's NBA if we had a time machine. But I also feel like I could play in the 40s and 50s. I've seen that footage, man. I could play in the 50s. I see Bob Cousy dribbling right in front of him.
You're not going to be able to do way. It.
George, we'll be back with more Jalen Jacoby.
You wouldn't have right a chance. This. Give the people what they
want. Welcome back, Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen Rose, the NFL draft is almost here, but there is some drama with some players that have already been drafted. Deshaun Watson, quarterback of the Texans, lost his number one target, DeAndre Hopkins, in a trade. Doesn't seem too happy about it because the latest is this. Look at the t-shirt that Mr. Watson is wearing. while he is working out in South Florida, the man wears a Dan Marino t-shirt. The Dolphins could use the quarterback, Jalen. Am I reading too much into this, or is Watson what using his shirt happened? To send a message to the Texans in the league?
Family, they traded. People keep saying one of the best receivers in the league. They traded one of the best players in the game who really ain't necessarily even in his prime yet, that has great statistics and rapport with the starting quarterback, and they went to the same college, his brother. And you just gonna trade him like that? Like a thief in the night? I came on this program, Jacoby. And you know, I pay attention to Deshaun since he was a youngster. Shout to Warwick Dunn and his foundation. I remember when his family was awarded a crib. You know, I pay attention to his cuts and he tried to stay wavy. You know, that's my guy. Love Deshaun Watson. Torched Alabama that had 11 pros on their D. When they traded DeAndre Hopkins, what did I say?
He's gone.
That the Texans he's get prepared gone. To do.
He's gone. Ain't get no ready to see. Deshaun Watson's next.
Ain't no coming back from that, fam. I truly believe the most important story in the NFL that no one is discussing is Deshaun Watson's unhappiness with the Houston Texans. Mm-hmm. He is a franchise quarterback. He is an elite player. He is the future along with Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. He's right there, Russell Wilson. He's right there. And for him to have a head coach that he ain't seeing eye to eye with, not good for Texans fans.
It is not good for Texans fans at all. And it reminds me a little bit of the That's All, folks, t-shirt from Anthony Davis in his last game with the Pelicans. Like, you can act like it's just a t-shirt. You can act like it's no big deal. But Deshaun Watson knows what he's doing. He knows that someone's going to take a picture of him. He knows that picture's going to go on Instagram. He knows it's going to become part of the news cycle. He's sending messages to the media and the league and subtly telling the Texans that he's not happy there. And either him or Bill O'Brien will not finish the season with the Texans and potentially both of them. So excited for the draft. Hopefully we'll get some movement in the league. It has nothing to do with the rookie players. Sometimes we get that. Moving on, Jalen Rose. You said that Deshaun Watson was a franchise quarterback. The Lions have a quarterback. They've got a franchise quarterback in Matt Stafford. But they're looking to add another franchise quarterback in the draft. And if Jalen Rose was in charge, they would draft none other than Tua Tagovailoa with the number 3 pick. The latest on Tua is well put in this tweet by our colleague from Laura Rutledge. Clarification of Tua Tagovailoa's Wonderlic score. He took the test in the spring of 2018 in Alabama and got a 13. He took it again at the combine and scored a 19. The average score is a 20. I'm told NFL teams have this information and there are no concerns. Jalen Rose, would a 13 and then a couple years later a 19 on the Wonderlic test make you think twice about drafting Tua Tagovailoa?
You know what it'll do, Jacoby? Instead of taking the time allotted to draft him, I would literally draft him 1 second into the opportunity for me to take him. Like, I would do that. I would be that guy. Because we watch these games and understand these prospects. And no, if he's behind an offensive line that's going to protect him, he's going to be slinging that football on Sunday, Mondays, and Thursdays. We know that. We've seen it. And Alabama has had a lot of quarterbacks, but none of them really like this. This is special. And I have to say something about his Wonderlic 13 score for everybody out there. Baseball players learn this too when they failed steroid test and then ultimately their names became public. And I'm going to say this for young people in particular who do a lot of trading on social media and on text. Those promiscuous pictures and or nudes and or videos, trust me, when you send them, you think it's staying private like this 13 Wonderlic score? It ain't staying private. They showing other people for sure. They get mad at you. They going to share them to the public if they can for sure. They sat him down and told him, just take this. It's no big deal. It'll stay between us. and he took it. No preparation, no nothing. Now we judging him on that 13 when it really doesn't matter because he ultimately scored a 19, which is 1 point under the average. But again, this is one of those things that happens in the NFL that I'm really glad doesn't happen in the NBA.
Well, I hope that you'll be very happy when they pass on Tua and pick Jeff Okuda from Ohio State at number three. I can't wait for that to happen. I'm really concerned about Friday's show. Even if you get Tua, you're going to be unbearable. If you don't get Tua, you're going to be unbearable. Friday's show, Jalen Jacoby, is going to be a must-watch show. Now, Jalen, I wonder what it would be like if you took the Wonderlic test. Like, I just imagine, just close my eyes and just imagine what it would look like if you and I took the Wonderlic test. If the average is 20, what do you think you and I get on the Wonderlic?
I like my 81% in your failed test. Those are pretty accurate assessments.
Look at my eyes. I remember like a failed test because of my eyes
throughout
right
the draft process, Jacoby, sleep, you man. Go work out for certain teams. And I wasn't as disciplined and focused for those visits as I should have been. And I don't blame anybody except myself. I remember working out with the Lakers, with Eddie Jones, and also them having us go take like a written test. And we were in the same room at the same time. And I was looking at him like it was boys in the hood. Like he was had his head down. He was focused. He was filling out his. I was just staring at him, staring at them. Like I ain't really even trying to do this. I can't even front. And so of 100% effort, I definitely gave 25. And Jerry West, who's the GOAT at a lot of things, knew the pedigree that I had with my biological father, Jimmy Walker, and we talked about him. I know he had love for me, but when he got my test, I'm pretty sure he's like, we can't draft him. We can't draft him. And a couple of the questions were like, what would you do with your first NBA check? How many people do you employ? And I was honest on those answers. You know, I employ like 13 people. You know, I would buy a mansion and fill a tub up with 40 ounces. That's what I would do. So I'm pretty sure they were like, you know, we probably shouldn't draft the guy with the red and white pinstripe. And Eddie Jones worked out better anyway because he can ball. That's my man. Played alongside Nick Van Exel. Played in front of Kobe. He deserved to go in front of me.
Well, Jalen, I'm glad that things worked out the way they did because now you're here on Jalen and Jacoby. And we'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen Rose, during this quarantine, we've heard from Giannis and Jason Tatum, two of the best basketball players in the entire NBA, that they were not even getting shots up, not even playing basketball. And Jimmy Butler must have heard this too because he did something. He took Madison into his own hands. He bought every one of his Miami Heat teammates and coaches basketball hoops so they would have no excuse to be ready when they get back to playing NBA basketball again. What do you think about this move, Jimmy Butler?
Jimmy Butler is my dog. I remember us covering on this show when he bought that fish tank when he was in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
On this show, telling you why it was great leadership to be up at 3 a.m. having his teammates come to practice with him.
Oh, not just that, Jalen. The on Miami this show, Heat. We celebrated him as being a card-carrying member of the Minivan Mafia. Jimmy Butler is my guy. And this move, by the hoops, he's like, I don't want to hear it from anybody. I bought you a hoop. I had it sent to your house. That shipping is not cheap into these conditions. I love this move from Jimmy Butler so much. So much.
I love this move too, but here's the only thing about that investment. Some of his teammates probably live in apartments. So therefore, you sending them a hoop, they really won't have any place to put it. That's the only thing. The gesture is awesome. The leadership is great. But the dynamics of the NBA and people staying in apartments is a lot higher than those realize.
Apartments got parking lots. That's what I would say if I was Jimmy Butler. Moving on, Jalen. We had something happen over the weekend that I think has a lot to do with the NFL draft. Now, during the mock draft, we've already heard from our NFL reporters that they had some technological problems. You wouldn't think. They had some bandwidth problems.
No.
They had communication problems. They had some problems with the number one pick in today's dress rehearsal, tech rehearsal for the NFL draft. Well, we also had some other tech problems over the weekend. Teddy Riley and Babyface. The battle that never happened. Teddy Riley couldn't get the heck together.
Baby.
And I just want to say, I understand, because if anybody has seen how hard it is for Jalen and I to get the tech together to bring these shows to you, then we have nothing but sympathy for a couple of other washed entertainers just trying to give the people what they want and technology getting in the way.
No doubt about it. And both of those guys got so many hit records. They got to try to do that again.
We'll be back tomorrow. Why is that, Jalen Rose?
We're not done. We're not done. We're not done.
He is Jalen Rose.
What up, though?
I'm David Jacoby.
And on the cool check-in.
Together with Jalen Jacoby, what is it that we do?
We give the people what they want.
Very special day today. Jalen, who's joining us?
I'm really enthusiastic today, Jacoby, because the gentleman that's joining our show today is a lockdown corner, a future Hall of Famer. No doubt about it, a champion, a leader, an intellect, and somebody that plays for the San Francisco 49ers and was in the Super Bowl this year. And they are my favorites to make it back again. Welcome to the program again, Mr. Richard Sherman.
I appreciate y'all having me. How you doing?
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for doing this, man. Now, the number one thing we have to talk to you about is a lot to get to, but we got to talk to you about The Last Dance. I know you tuned in. I know you tuned in last night to watch the Michael Jordan documentary. Did you watch it?
I did not watch it. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm so
tired.
Oh,
good. You should save it.
I'm going to just keep watching my TV.
How much time are you spending playing Call of Duty?
Too much. That's the problem.
That's what he was doing. That's what I was going to ask. So how did you start playing Call of Duty in a 24-hour period? What's the most you may play in a day?
These days, when we're in the quarantines, maybe 8 hours, 7 hours, something like that. Yeah, it's a lot.
So is this against homies, strangers, friends, family, internet?
Strangers, usually. I'm usually playing with friends, but, they got different modes that you can have your friends as your teammates, and we mostly play Warzone, but... Yeah, it takes up most of my time, so I don't usually cut the TV on too much. I let the wife have it.
So obviously you've got some version of an NFL season coming up. We don't like to talk about how it's going to look or what it's going to be like. Fans, no fans. Is it going to be in one location? Because honestly, we don't know what it's going to be. And I imagine you're in the same place, but I know that you are going to have to be in shape. So how do you stay physically and mentally sharp through the summer during these quarantine conditions?
It's pretty much the same routine for me during the off season. I hop on my Peloton bike. I go out and get my work in, outside. Thankfully, I got a nice yard and I got some room to run and get that in and got a swimming pool and get that in. So I'm not as concerned about being ready as I guess everybody else is. But it'll be different. It'll be an adjustment, you know, adjustment for all leagues whenever we get back to it. Playing without fans, we go to practice every day. Obviously, it's different, but, you know, guys will be able to execute and get the job done. Somebody will win, somebody will lose. You know, the show will go on.
Jacoby, you hear that explanation? He's rich. Pool, yard.
Okay, got a big yard he can run in, man. Yeah, he got two ride-on lawnmowers. Takes him a day and a half to cut the grass. He got someone that does that for him.
Y'all are sad.
So the last time you came on the show was around the ESPYs, and I remember us talking about if players really wanted to get everything that they stood for in a collective bargaining, striking probably should be an option. You guys just did a new collective bargaining agreement, and I see Eric Reed had opposition about you guys signing that. What are your thoughts on how all of that played out?
Oh, I had as much or more opposition than he did, you know, because, you know, the sad thing about that is he kind of stopped being a rep and stopped, you know, he used to have a vote. So he could have voted against it and, you know, been part of that. And we only needed like two more votes to shoot it down.
Mm.
But, you know what I mean? It was one of those situations where he's no longer a rep and we lost 14 to 16 and one abstain. You know what I mean? So it was one of those situations where the vote was so close that if guys who were arguing against it were still reps, then they could have just voted against it and we wouldn't be in this position we're in. But, you know, it is what it is. Guys got to accept it now because, you know, it's a reality.
What do you think could have been better for the players in this collective bargaining agreement that's been agreed to?
A ton. There could have been a ton more done in terms of health and safety and protecting guys once they're done playing. Obviously protecting former players and making sure they get their benefits. I think those are some of the more important things that guys kind of glass over. You know, playing 17 games shouldn't have been an option, but, you know, you get left there. You know, there's a lot of things I don't agree with in the deal, and that's why, you know, as an executive committee member, I voted no. As a rep, I voted no. And as a normal player, I voted no. But, you know, it went through, so everybody, you know, got to live with it. But I don't when the history's written, I don't want to be part of the group that said yes.
How did one team abstain from voting? Like, is this just one rep just decided not to participate? I didn't really understand that when I saw it. Do you have any insight?
He literally just didn't vote. He abstained. You got to ask him. You know, I don't want to put his business out there because, you know, everybody got their own opinions. But you got to ask that man.
Wow. And another thing that I saw that you have a strong opinion about, and the Wonderlink scores are supposed to be private, but yet it seems like every now and then it leaks, and Tua allegedly took the test freestyle at Alabama and got a 13 and took it this year right before the draft and got a 19. Can you enlighten us your thoughts and how you feel about the Wonderlink scores and if they're valid and or if it's too much placed on their value?
It's just a nothing test. You know what I mean? It's not a football test. So if you want a guy to take a test, you know, gauging his intelligence, then gauge his intelligence. But to say the Wonderlic, you know what I mean? You have guys at the combine who are usually off of 3 or 4 hours of sleep going back and forth, you know what I mean? Getting pushed around here, tested at 3 o'clock in the morning, then being kept up till 1 o'clock in the morning for meetings with coaches and evaluations. And then you want them to go in the room and take a test for 30 minutes and take it seriously when it'll have no effect on their draft grade. You know, it's just not something guys are going to do. Now, some guys are just better test takers and they say, hey, this is easy. I'm just going to blast through this. And some guys are like, man, I'm tired. I don't feel like doing this or being here. And it's not going to affect whether I go or not. So what's the point?
If you were a decision maker, a front office member, a GM, how much would you value or would you weight the variable of the Wonderlic score as you evaluate a player?
Zero. I wouldn't even have it, you know, cause it doesn't tell you enough. There can be guys who freaking score out of this world on the Wonderlic and, you know, can't absorb a playbook and go out there and execute, can't, you know, diagnose defenses, can't play fast, you know, and then there's guys who quote unquote have low tests and go out there and dominate the game because it doesn't translate. It doesn't have any correlation.
And also, as a student of the game, Richard, I couldn't wait to ask you this next question. There are a few quarterbacks that are highly touted that are going to be picked in the first round this year. If you were a GM and you could take any quarterback that's available this year, Burrow, Herbert, Tua, the list goes on, who would you take and why?
I'd probably take the Burrows kid. You know, he's played well in big games. He's shown up, shown an aptitude to make big plays and to be precise in his ability. to be poised under pressure, you know, all that matters. You know, obviously it doesn't always translate to the next level, but he seems to have all the measurables, everything you want in a quarterback, and leads the men well.
This is a me thing as a media member, not necessarily because of you and Jalen, you understand better, but as part of the media after the Super Bowl that Monday, it seems like we're always just trying to sort of to put blame, to slice up the blame pie and divvy out the different slices to different members of the losing team. And it felt like a lot of that blame was placed on the shoulders of Jimmy Garoppolo. What did it feel like being in the locker room, being his teammate, and then sort of watching and hearing about the reaction from the Super Bowl and people even going so far as saying that the 49ers need to replace Jimmy Garoppolo as the starting quarterback?
I mean, honestly, I didn't pay much attention to it. In the locker room, it was fine. You know, guys were disappointed we lost. You know, it was a great season. Guys fought hard. You know, they beat us. At the end of the day, none of us executed well enough at the end of that ball game to win it. But nobody in our locker room even remotely thinks that. I think that's, once again, the outside world. You know, if you left it to the outside world and the media to make decisions, they'd make the most terrible decisions. Teams would be torn apart. Guys, you know what I mean? Like, every time it's like, hey, replace this guy. And then he's a Hall of Famer. And they're like, see, I told you he was great. And then, you know, they're never wrong. Critics can never be wrong, apparently. So we don't really worry about that noise. You know, he's our guy. He's a guy we believe in. He just took us to the Super Bowl. And we hope to try to make it there next year.
I think Garoppolo is nice. He got game. I love his poise in the pocket to get rid of the football fast. He doesn't really make mistakes. He's one of the guys. I think he is a player that can not only lead you guys but help you win Super Bowls going forward with the right opportunity. So I was one of the people that disagree with that noise. And if you guys play again, I'm predicting that it's going to be without fans. And I was telling Jacoby how you can hear trash talk, you can hear play calls. It's going to be a lot more physical because players on the field know that the fans can hear. What would life be like somewhat playing without fans?
It'd be different for sure. I think the stadiums would filter in noise. I think that's one of the things that would kind of normalize it for players is just, you know, the sounds that you're used to hearing during the game. But I also think that, you know, guys practice without fans all the time. And you know, after a game, after a few quarters, guys will get used to it and you'll be locked in.
I mean, I'm forecasting the NFL coming back sometime in the fall, playing games without fans and having players tested. How much would actual contact with other players would that concern you in a coronavirus situation? Like, would you be worried about contacting the virus through playing the game, which is essentially your job?
I don't worry about it at all. Because I think, you know, people, I don't know, I guess it might be an athlete, you know, macho thing, but there was a time during last season where I felt like almost the entire league had it, you know, that wow. There was a time the Patriots were taking a separate plane and everybody thought it was a flu, and guys are running out of ball games. I think one of the O linemen for the Vikings had to leave, couldn't even play. He was a starter. So I'm pretty sure it's already ran rapid through our league, honestly. Like when they have the antibody test or whatever, I'm sure they'll figure out that a lot of the league has had it and gotten through it. Because they thought it was the flu. So they didn't quarantine anybody. They didn't separate anybody. They didn't keep guys at home. Guys were still coming to work, going to work, doing the same normal things, interacting with guys, having conversations, practicing. So it's one of those things that, you know, it'll kind of be what it is. You know what I mean? Guys will get tested. They'll do their best. You know, guys will, the league will try to keep everybody safe, but it's life.
I agree with Richard because each of us could have it and not show symptoms because all of us will not get tested. And that period of time that he described in the NFL where players were getting sick or whatnot, that's before we acknowledged it to be a pandemic. So I'm approaching it the way he is that like first responders almost, Jacoby, you want to work and entertain the fans, but also to make a living and play the game you love. And correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, if they call you and say you have the opportunity to do that and play against Drew Brees and Tom Brady and Russell Wilson in the NFC, you're going to be ready to do so.
100%. 100% going to be ready to do so. And that's, you know, obviously you're going to do it your best to stay safe and keep your family safe and, you know what I mean, to the best of your ability. But at the end of the day, you know, things are going to be what they are. You know, I can't predict everything. I can't save them. I can't put them in a bubble, you know what I mean, and save them from everything that's going to happen in this world. So I'm not going to pretend like I have that kind of control. You know what I mean? I'm going to do the best of my ability, but got a job to do.
One final question for you is you're going to have some new colleagues soon. There's going to be a draft on Thursday night, and there's been some talk about the 49ers potentially trading one or both of their first-round picks, and people discuss different needs that the team has. What do you think the team should be looking for in this year's draft?
I never try to play, you know, GM in this regard. You know what I mean? That's what they pay John and all those scouts for and Adam. I think we got a really good team, you know, and I think, you know, it's one of those situations where whoever we get, you know, will be icing on the cake. You know, we have a team that just got to the Super Bowl, and you always want to get better and you need to get better. And I'm sure we will. And I'm sure, you know, we need more picks. So that's why they're open to trading and things like that. But I think whatever they pick, you know, I think they're talking about receivers, O-linemen, D-linemen. You know, I mean, they can get everything. I don't think they're talking about a quarterback, corners. But I think whoever they get, you know, will be an asset to the team. The last draft class was fantastic and helped us a ton. You know, I'm not sure we'd have made it without Debo and everybody in that class. They had a lot of freaking stars in that class. Greenlaw. That class is probably will go down as one of the best classes to come through the 49ers, honestly, in the way they helped us, especially in their rookie year. You know, rookie year, they helped us get to the Super Bowl.
That's a great point. They certainly did well on draft night last year. Now, I just want to say that you are one of my number one picks when you finally exit the league, because we're ready for you here in the media. I've always said, you can always tell who's going to be good in the media. You can always tell who's going to be good in their post-athletic career in the media. And you, if you wanted to, you will have a very long and lucrative career. So you are welcome to join us with Jalen Jacoby anytime, anytime.
I appreciate that. We'll have to do this again.
I got another job for him, potentially, Jacoby. He could be president and GM of the Lions. That's what we need.
Really risky over there. Really risky. I'm funny.
Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, guys.